Khodorkovsky needed American and European specialists to help him with this corporate metamorphosis, to spruce up Yukos's books so that someone like Lee Raymond could audit them and not walk away shaking his head, as he had done over Rosneft. Khodorkovsky recruited experienced executives from the major U.S. and European-headquartered oil and oil service companies to fashion this financial makeover. He also transformed Yukos technically and operationally by recruiting engineers to raise production and profitability at the company's major oil fields. From Schlumberger, he hired Michel Soublin, a Frenchman, as an interim chief financial officer. He recruited Joe Mach, also from Schlumberger, to oversee oil production. Mach brought in Stephen Cheesbrough, who had been chief executive of Tenneco Energy, a U.S.-based $4 billion company, when it came time to recruit a permanent CFO. Cheesbrough telephoned an old colleague, Bruce Missamore, then 49, who had spent his career as a senior financial executive in the American oil business, including 17 years at Marathon Oil. "Look," Cheesbrough told Missamore, "I just got a call from a buddy of mine who is working for a large Russian oil company. They're looking for an American CFO. My wife told me not to call you, but I just thought, is this something that you might be interested in?" Missamore had semi-retired. He was financially secure and comfortable, busy with his family, but he was relatively young. He decided to look into Yukos. It sounded like an adventure. Missamore knew enough about Russia to know that you didn't want to get yourself in the wrong situation there, lest you end up raked by automatic weapons fire one morning. He read in depth about an earlier dispute that had taken place between Mikhail Khodorkovsky and the American investor Kenneth Dart. From his initial research, he could tell that Khodorkovsky was somebody who had the bad boy image for a while, but he could detect as well that the young Russian was sincere about transforming Yukos into a normal corporation with proper audits, governance structure, and accounting. Khodorkovsky had already hired a former auditor from BP, and he had retained the accounting firm Price Waterhouse Coopers to implement generally accepted accounting principles. He had also retained the consulting firm McKinsey & Company, and with its advice, had totally revamped the structure of the organization, Missamore recalled. Khodorkovsky had also recruited international directors to his board, and had a goal to win a listing for Yukos on an international stock exchange. Missamore decided to take a chance. He accepted the position of chief financial officer of Yukos and moved to Moscow in 2001. Every Monday afternoon, Missamore met with Khodorkovsky in the Russian's office in the old Soviet-era Menatep Bank building on Ulansky Perulik, fronting Moscow's Garden Ring. Khodorkovsky usually wore jeans, a turtleneck, and a sport coat. Missamore came to regard the young billionaire as a visionary and a natural leader. He lacked some management skills, perhaps, but he possessed a powerful intuition about Russia's present and future, Missamore believed. In late 2001, just as the Bush-Putin energy negotiations were launched, Khodorkovsky told Missamore that he wanted to explore the sale of some of his and his partner's shares in Yukos, up to 25%, to a foreign oil company. Given the immense amount of oil reserves controlled by Yukos, this would be a great prize in equity oil holdings for whatever corporation bought in. For Yukos, it would diversify ownership and provide opportunities to explore and develop oil reserves outside Russia. Missamore was enthusiastic. "One of the reasons I came here, Mikhail, was because I wanted to have a big impact on the future of Russia, through the example of Yukos," he told Khodorkovsky. "This guy Putin, all the reforms and his support for reforms, everything seems to be going very well." "Be very careful," Khodorkovsky had replied, as Missamore recalled it. "What is going on behind the scenes, and nobody can see it, is that Putin is stacking the Kremlin with former KGBers and former Russian military types. This is very, very dangerous because Putin is basically consolidating his power through these groups of ultra-conservative Russians. Once he gets that power established in the Kremlin, it is going to be worse." That was why they had to move diligently. Khodorkovsky believed they could succeed in selling a piece of Yukos, but they would have to watch the Kremlin carefully. Although he did not discuss it at length with Mizimor at their weekly meetings, Khodorkovsky seemed to have his own strategy to counter Putin. He was spending money to build ties to members of Russia's parliament, the Duma, to create a political bulwark against the Kremlin. Khodorkovsky never explained his strategy fully, and perhaps he was too opportunistic and improvisational to have a careful one, but it appeared that he envisioned two prongs of activity to outflank Putin's cabal: a deal with a Western oil corporation to infuse Yukos with cash and political links abroad, and a network of allies in Russian politics. On an afternoon in early 2002, several large black armored cars pulled up outside John Brown's home in Cambridge, England, and numerous burly bodyguards emerged, as Brown recalled it, to scan the horizon. When the bodyguards were satisfied, Mikhail Khodorkovsky stepped out. He went inside to join Brown over lunch. Khodorkovsky struck the BP chairman at first as being an unassuming man, but as he spoke about Yukos and its place in Russian politics, Brown grew increasingly nervous. Khodorkovsky said he was prepared to sell a quarter of his company, plus one share, a percentage that conferred certain rights to the buyer under Russian law. Brown said he did not feel that was enough of a stake in Yukos to justify an investment. "You can have 25%, no more, and no control," Khodorkovsky answered, as Brown recalled it. "If you come along with me, you will be taken care of." Khodorkovsky went on to talk about getting people elected to the Duma, about how he could make sure oil companies did not pay much tax, and about how he had many influential people under his control, as Brown put it later. The BP chairman felt that Khodorkovsky seemed too powerful, and that there was something untoward about his approach. After the Cambridge lunch, Brown broke off negotiations. Brown's account, written later, smacked of some of the benefits of hindsight, but it was true that he now turned away from Yukos as a target for BP's deeper push into Russian oil. When Brown eventually found another partner in Moscow, it would have consequences for Khodorkovsky and Lee Raymond, just as his fist-mover merger with Amoco had pushed Exxon and Mobil together a few years earlier.